In the hills along the Sauk River in Washington's Cascade Mountains, a team from the U.S. Forest Service is looking for a tree to kill.
I was bringing that second tree back.
So the first tree, the one right behind it?
Correct.
The workers plan to cut the top off a 70-year-old Douglas fir. That will create something this forest has lacked since it was clear-cut decades ago. Standing dead trees, known as snags. Forest Service biologist Lisa Norris says snags are essential for a diverse assortment of wildlife.
Overall, about a third of all the wildlife species across the United States utilize snags or down logs for nesting, breeding, feeding, foraging, denning. So it's a large, large number of critters we're talking about. We'll lose them if we don't have these kinds of habitat.
Old growth forests are filled with trees in various stages of death and decomposition, victims of wind or fire or lightning. The snags provide a niche for fungus and insects, even eagles and endangered spotted owls. But second growth forests, like this one, are too young to contain many naturally occurring snags, which means they can't support the same diversity of wildlife. So, freelance tree faller Tim Brown is gearing up to turn a living tree into a snag.
There's more life in a dead tree than a live tree. Once a tree dies, its lifespan is half over. It's still going to be a home for many, 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 many species.
Mr. Brown straps on his climbing spurs and harness. The tree to be sacrificed is 80 feet tall and 2 feet thick.
It's big enough in diameter to support a pileated woodpecker, which is the biggest of the woodpecker family. And it's along an open road, so it's a great flyway corridor for bats.
As he works his way up the tree, Mr. Brown communicates with the ground via radio.
So I'm going to throw this tree down the hill. Is that all right?
Okay.
As the cut begins, Forest Service biologist Phyllis Reed watches from a road nearby. She looks uneasy.
Does it bother you to see a tree go down?
Oh, yes. It always sort of is like, you know, going out here and trying to decide which one of these vigorous young trees and we're going to take the top off, kind of off with its head.
It takes just 90 seconds for the top half of the tree to come crashing down. All that's left is a limbless trunk, 40 feet tall. But Mr. Brown's work has really just begun. Next, he carefully carves jagged edges into the treetop to make it look more natural and expose more surface area to the elements. Then he slips partway down, where he roughs up the bark for sapsuckers and chisels an elaborate cave for bats.
The work that Tim does for us in the wildlife tree creation is really artistic. Hopefully the pattern of scarring that is on the tree is very natural looking and will attract some of the wildlife species that we're targeting.
That look okay from down there?
Yeah, it looks like the tree snapped off in a windstorm.
This slit here has capability of holding about 30 bats comfortably. I wanted these bats to have a different microclimate they could select from during cold weather, as well as protection.
Tim Brown single-handedly created the practice of sculpting trees like this for wildlife. Biologists have known about the importance of snags for some time and have experimented with crude attempts to blast the tops off trees with dynamite. But Mr. Brown has elevated the work to an art form with more than 1,000 specific chainsaw techniques tailored to help everything from bears to salamanders. He's a self-taught woodsman and former logger who believes people have a role in restoring the forest to health.
I never was happy cutting timber because most of those were huge clear cuts. They went across streams, rivers, right down to the lake. And it was agonizing. And as the environment began to get squeezed more and more, I felt this moral obligation to assist.
Mr. Brown went into business for himself, and at first concentrated on dead trees that threatened roads, power lines, or homes. Instead of taking the entire tree down, he persuaded clients to leave as much of the trunk standing as possible. Then he turned to clear-cut areas that were starting to grow back. Mr. Brown convinced government officials that as the forest returned, a man with a chainsaw could do some good.
Chainsaws, sure, they're viewed as a weapon of destruction, you know, in the forest. They wipe out the forest, they kill the trees and so forth. But they are also can be viewed as a tool of healing on the landscape.
Mr. Brown spends part of his time evaluating how well his chainsaw creations have worked. On this 200-year-old cedar, he's boring a core sample to gauge the extent of decay. This tree was left behind by loggers because its center is hollow.
You can see here how rotten it is. So it's a low value for lumber, but it's a high value for wildlife.
4 years ago, Mr. Brown cut a 3-foot hole that opened up the tree's chimney-like interior. Now, he's climbing back to the opening to see what's inside.
I think I see a squirrel up in here that just went into its nest in here.
The cavity is home to 2 squirrel nests, and the bark has numerous claw marks, a sign that bears have been investigating this tree as a future den for hibernation. The results were encouraging to the Forest Service's Lisa Norris.
I think it's very successful when we can come back and actually find critters there. That to me tells me it's a success as a technique, and we just need to expand the use of the technique.
American and Canadian officials have sponsored seminars where Tim Brown has taught his chainsaw techniques to unemployed loggers. His hope is that snag creation will one day become an important source of habitat restoration jobs in communities that once depended on cutting trees. For Living on Earth, I'm Terry Fitzpatrick in the Mount Baker Snoqualmie National Forest near Seattle.